Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
They said, Richard, are you gonna go out tonight? I am uncertain, I ain't feeling too right. But I rip up my shirt, wipe the melody flood. Yeah, I'm going out, out into sight. Wow!
Yeah. This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. As the musician, poet, and writer Richard Hell tells it, he spent much of his Kentucky childhood dreaming of running away. He came to New York penniless and went on to become one of the most influential voices of 1970s punk. He started bands like Television, The Heartbreakers, and The Voidoids, and was a pivotal part of the now iconic punk club CBGB's. Many have told Hell's story over the years, but now he's telling it himself. In a book called I Dreamed I Was a Very Clean Tramp, an autobiography. Richard Hell, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey.
So you...
Let me interject.
Already? Second. Okay.
Yeah. I didn't really dream of running away.
You did always run away.
It was always an impulse.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, and you did a lot of running away. I mean, the early parts of the book, you run away from Kentucky, you run away from Washington, you run away from Delaware. I mean, you're constantly, I mean, even the title of the book,
yeah.
I Dreamed I Was a Very Clean Tramp.
Well, you know, actually, I originally had the idea of doing a kind of oblique self-portrait years ago, writing a series of accounts of running away.
Uh-huh.
From the beginning, that was a sort of theme.
Mm.
It hit me that I had this history of running away, and that still just thinking about that it triggered this kind of thrill. I just recognized that in myself, and I thought, when something like that happens, you try to exploit it as an artist, you know what I mean, as a writer or a songwriter or whatever.
And you also mention in the book trying to find other words for thrill, ecstasy, you know, the kinds of highs that you get from, that you would eventually find, at least for a while, in music.
Yeah. Well, just because there were a lot of occasions of that in my life and in the book, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so I had to try to find ways to keep it fresh. I mean, that's what you're looking for, right, is when you're just carried off to the stratosphere by something, you know.
Well, this may be an unfair question, but given all the running away that you've done, are there moments, instances in your life where you kind of see yourself as having run towards something?
No. It was always just to get away from where I was and to be new and a stranger again.
Yeah.
You know, to start fresh.
So that reinvention, or if you're a kid, I guess it's inventing yourself, so feeling out who you can be as
yeah,
you grow
just
up.
Not, you know, I mean, when in your family, they think they know you, and that can get oppressive, you know,
mm-hmm.
you start to resent it, and you want to be somewhere where nobody knows you.
Right, right. So in the early parts of the book, and again, we're speaking with Richard Hell, his book is I Dreamed I Was a Very Clean Tramp, an autobiography. So, you know, you go through the whole series of journeys that brings you to New York, and you start as a poet, and, you know, you're doing, you're publishing.
An aspiring poet.
And
you know,
publisher.
I'm not comfortable with being called a poet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't really write poetry anymore, and even when I was young, it was always a struggle. I mean, I loved books and I loved the poems that I loved. And that was, you know, what my conception of myself was there for a few
mm-hmm.
years. As soon as I arrived at that, I moved on. And that's when I started a band.
So, right.
Yeah.
So this is my question is, you know, you're writing at some length about early years in New York and it's dirty and you're poor and, you know, you're doing this and that to just eke by. And then suddenly you turn the page. And so I wrote, you know, Love Comes in Spurts, and I wrote Blank Generations. And it was like, just like that? I mean, how did that, was it really just like turning a page and suddenly you're writing songs?
Yeah, it was. You know, I mean, part of what was appealing about the music that inspired me was that It wasn't pretentious. It wasn't about virtuosity.
Well, what was that music?
You know, 60s garage bands and the Stooges and the Velvet Underground. And I mean, it was kind of deceptive because it seemed as if anybody could do what they were doing. It wasn't that easy, really. They were really brilliant, as sophisticated as it comes.
Well, it's like the old saying goes, you know, 'tis a gift to be simple. You know, you may think they're the same three chords everyone else is playing, but there's still magic to be mined in those three chords.
Yeah, totally.
We're speaking with Richard Hell. His new autobiography is called I Dreamed I Was a Very Clean Tramp. So some of your best-known songs, including Love Comes in Spurts, mm-hmm. were also your earliest songs, it seems. I mean, you mentioned that one pretty much right off the bat.
Yeah. It tends to work that way, but I only made two albums, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, I left music after the second album. But it's true also, and it's something I've noticed. In a way, you have an advantage when you're first starting out because you haven't developed any habits. You know, mm-hmm. you haven't gotten into any ruts. You haven't, I mean, what happens after you start learning how to do things is that you repeat them. Mm-hmm. Because you naturally tend to do that. You find out how to achieve this certain thing, and so it gets tired.
All right, well, this song, Love Comes in Spurts, is one of those early songs that you wrote. There was an early version you did with Tom Verlaine when you guys were still young and making your way in New York, a later version with the Heartbreakers, and then there's the version that got recorded. That's this one, Richard Hell and the Voidoids with Love Comes in Spurts.
I was a child who wanted all of some wild, though died in slow motion, but played with devotion, baby, and sang with devotion, just a whole other notion. I was 14 and a half, and it wasn't no lamb.
Love comes in spurts.
Oh, no, it hurts.
Love comes in spurts.
Oh, no, it hurts.
Love comes in spurts.
It always hurts.
Love comes in spurts.
Oh, no. I just gave you wives to the tragic
Richard Hell and the Voidoids. Love Comes in Spurts. Richard Hell is my guest on Soundcheck. His new autobiography is called I Dreamed I Was a Very Clean Tramp. And the figure of Tom Verlaine occupies a fair amount of the middle portion of the book, your early years here in New York, and the guitarist and songwriter with whom you lived for a while, co-founded the band Television. By the time the first Television album comes out, you're not in the band anymore, right?
Yeah, and I hadn't been for a while. I mean, yeah, I have absolutely no relationship to that record.
Yeah.
I had no presence on it, no influence on it. It's totally Tom. The group was different when I was in it.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like you guys had a really kind of fraught relationship. You quote somebody else in the book in another context as saying, "We hate each other as only best friends can."
Yeah.
Is that basically the relationship you and Tom had in those years?
Well, not at the beginning. I mean, we were pretty inseparable for 5, 6, 7 years. And, you know, for most of that time, it was just a normal best friend relationship. Though, at the same time, there was some, you know, we were both kind of ambitious young artists. And there was a certain rivalry going on, you know, and it's a little bit of amount of skepticism, but, you know, we were just ordinary best friends. But we were very young. I'm talking about from when we were 17 to 23, 24.
Because you'd gone to the same high school.
We'd gone to the same school, and those are the years when you develop the most, right? And we kind of went off in a little bit of different directions,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, it's normal.
You go through this whole thing, you know, and then Tom Verlaine and Patti Smith are a couple for a brief period of time. And that, you know, I know you were a huge fan of Patti Smith, as most of us were, if you were on the scene in New York in the 70s.
Well, I wouldn't describe it as a huge fan. I would say that
your I wasn't initial a fan. Your initial description of Patti Smith is not just how good she was, but how sexy she was, and how
well that you know almost any good performer is very sexy. Hmm. I mean, that's part of what being a good performer is about.
You know? Well, now you do say later in the book that rock and roll made you handsome.
That's true.
How does that happen?
Well. As I say, it's kind of built into being a front person, you know. I mean, you're regarded that way. And I used the transition from being a grubby, street, unknown, underground writer to being a rock and roll musician as a opportunity to kind of redesign myself as a kind of performance, you know?
So that's the ripped clothing, the shorn hair, the safety pins, all of that was part of this?
Yeah.
And this, of course, would then go on to become the punk look. Malcolm McLaren, who would later manage the Sex Pistols, was aware of you early on, right?
Yeah, he came to CBGB's and was smitten.
And took that look back home, and look what happened to it there. We're speaking with Richard Hell, the author of the new autobiography, I Dreamed I Was a Very Clean Tramp. I want to go back to one of the last things you did with television, the Brian Eno-produced demo tapes of the
yeah,
band.
Yeah, I mean, that was really at the end. I mean, I left within a week or two of that, as I recall. Yeah, I mean, I was basically out of the group by then, but, I mean, psychologically, but yeah, I was still the bass player and turned up for those sessions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to hear a little clip from this, and then I want to ask you about one line from the song in particular. It's a Tom Verlaine song, so this is Venus de Milo from the band Television prior to this is 3 years before their first record with a series of demo tapes that Brian Eno produced.
Man, that is primitive. I haven't heard that in 30, 40 years.
I was just going to say, for people who, you know, complain that when that first Television record came out, it was lumped in with punk, and that first record didn't sound like punk, that version from 74 sounds punky.
Well,
it was a demo tape. But now let me ask you about the line where Tom Verlaine sings, and Richie says, let's dress up like cops, think of what we can do. You kind of explain where that comes from in the book.
Yeah, well, when I was conceiving how I wanted to present myself back in those days, one of the sort of methods I had, strategies, was to wear clothes or to consider clothes that were created to be as functional as possible for people who really needed that particular article of clothing. In other words, for shoes, I went to tap shoe makers because I thought that those would have to be shoes that really were comfortable and also flexible and
wouldn't
had
need
that
to be
functional,
replaced.
Yeah, had that kind of functional sort of grace to them.
Yeah.
And when I came to outerwear, one possibility was motorcycle jackets, but I thought that they were cliched. They were already worn by people who wanted to look like street people, but with this like S&M touch, you know,
okay.
Like Andy Warhol wore leather jackets all the time, and so I thought a little further, and I said, the police on motorcycles also have to have that highly functional protection from the elements. And so I thought maybe I could get a police leather jacket. So that's what I did. I went to the store nearest the police academy where they catered to the police and got a police leather jacket. And then I saw all that stuff inside there and said to Tom, hey, this, why don't we buy a whole outfit?
You could have been the Village People.
Right. I actually considered making a band that would be like that. Before the Village People happened, it was going to be called The Professionals. And everybody would dress in the style of a certain kind of career person.
Oh.
It wouldn't have like an Indian. It would have like, a guy in a gray flannel suit and
a surgeon.
Policeman and a surgeon.
Yeah, all right. That would have been a very different... We would have had a very different image of you, Richard Hell, if your band had been called The Professionals.
That was just a whim. I wouldn't really carry it through.
The book is called I Dreamed I Was a Very Clean Tramp, an autobiography by the singer, songwriter, and writer Richard Hell. You write early on in the book that your roots are shallow. You know, you sort of are jealous of, you know, the Jewish comic or the African-American writer or the Latino poet who has, you know, something, a kind of deep cultural set of a soil, really, to draw on. And you felt you didn't have that. When I read that, I thought, well, that's kind of like what Blank Generation is about.
I think it's consistent with it, yeah. And one way it finally comes down to, and this was something that, you know, I was conscious of back in those days, it's not really true now, except, you know, under pressure, maybe it is, that when you, in the final analysis, right, I don't care. That was one of the first songs I wrote, actually. It was called I Don't Care. We never ended up recording it. But
the idea that, you know...
I think that, you know, I mean, if you have a strong grounding ethnically, culturally, you do care.
Yeah. Did the downtown scene, Max's Kansas City, CBGB's, all the people you met that you lived with, that you had sex with, that you talk about in the book, did that become kind of a culture? Did that take the place of whatever you felt you were missing?
You know, at the beginning, there was this sense of common cause in a certain way. You know, at least there was a place we could go where we knew we would find congenial company, which was CBGB.
Right.
And, you know, there were certain things we had in common. I mean, for me, this is the way I always looked at it, and it was part of my motivation for in music, too, that I wanted the music to, again, be about real life. The stuff you heard on the radio wasn't. It was just like conventional love songs or big, overblown, pretentious, pompous stadium rock or symphonic.
Prog rock.
Yeah.
Progressive.
Right. And we all wanted to speak from actual experience in the most unvarnished, uncensored, honest way, you know.
And for a lot of people in New York in the 70s, this song did that. The song is Blank Generation from my guest Richard Hell and the Voidoids. Blank Generation, Richard Hell and the Voidoids. Richard Hell is my guest on Soundcheck. The book is called I Dreamed I Was a Very Clean Tramp, an autobiography. And you talk elsewhere in the book about other meanings of this song. You know, Blank Generation, a somewhat contentious interview with, was it Lester Bangs?
Yeah, I go on for a few pages about the issue of how it's come to be that whenever that song is mentioned in the press, they always preface it by insisting that I had made the point that the song was positive, that saying you belong to the Blank Generation was about the opportunity to fill in the blank mm-hmm. with the limitless possibilities of who you might become, as if it were some, you know, goofy self-help number. Right. And so I explain how that's not true.
Right. Now, at the time, as you're going through this process of, you know, becoming a rock and roll songwriter, a musician, a front man, you're also going through a concurrent process of becoming a junkie. And, you know, this, the sort of the way these two processes go together and are kind of interlinked, is that what leads you eventually to get out of music?
Well, I don't see them as interlinked. I don't think that there was a direct connection between the music and the ending up addicted to drugs, though there was some relationship. I mean, it's legendarily true that there's a kind of inclination of musicians to use narcotics.
Yeah.
But I think it was kind of built into me. I think whatever I was going to do, it was going to be outside of normal society, mm-hmm. Just as it was before I went into music. And whatever I chose to do, if I decided from being a poet that, no, I think I'm a painter, or I don't know, whatever path I was going to take, it was not going to be part of conventional normal society. And it was kind of built into my psychology that effects of narcotics were attractive to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would have happened anyway. But being a professional musician entails so much boredom. Mm-hmm. I mean, being on the road is really boring. And it, not only is it boring, but the kinds of stresses are really demoralizing. It's the same thing every day, and it's always squalid. And then the other part of it, the stressful part, that's the boring part. The stressful part is that, you know, as an artist, you want to keep it fresh every night.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost impossible because you're doing this every day. And I think that's maybe a lot of the reason that you especially associate drug use with jazz musicians.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they really have to reach down. They can't fake it. I mean, because the whole essence of what they're doing is improvisation, and the stress of being able to find the means in themselves night after night to be inspired is just crushing.
Well, and you think of the bebop generation of the 50s, and you know,
that's what I'm talking about.
Serious drug use there. So the life of a professional musician turned out to be boring and stressful and squalid. Do you miss it?
No, I don't miss it. I don't miss it at all.
The book is I Dreamed I Was a Very Clean Tramp, an autobiography by Richard Hell, who's been with us here in the Soundcheck studio. Richard, thank you so much for being with us.
Sure.
This is Soundcheck.
I'd had it. I was mush to the bones. I covered the windows. I was taking no calls. Then I thought for a month inside the alien walls. Now I know they don't tell you so. Now I know they don't tell you so. Now I know they don't tell you so. But I can recall it all.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Our coverage of this week's South by Southwest Music Festival continues. On Tuesday, the singer-songwriter Devendra Banhart released his first full-length album in 4 years. It's called Mala, and he is now in Austin to play songs for it from the South by crowd tomorrow at the Central Presbyterian Church. Devendra Banhart, thanks for taking some time out to talk with us.
You're welcome.
So before I ask you about your new record, be our South by Southwest reporter for a moment. What's it like down there in Austin right now?
Well, John, there's a lot going on. It's hard to see. We're deep in the bush, and it's burning. It's great. There's a lot of shows. No one can get into any of them. And it's just a real blast. It's a real exercise and complete entropy. And it's like a buffet,
okay,
with no food, or inaccessible food.
The Pulitzer people have called. They want their prize back. So, Devendra, when's the last time you actually played at South by Southwest?
Many years ago, when I was a young gal.
And does it seem much different this time around?
It's slightly different. I believe that the Bud Light sign that illuminated the back, the stage, and the two metal bands that I was sandwiched in between are probably still going at it. But this time it was a pleasure. I got to play with a couple musicians that I'd only heard of, and I finally got to see live. And I got to be told that I couldn't go see the bands that I was very excited to see, which is great, because it's an excuse not to have to see any human beings.
But you did see some folks that you say, you know, you were impressed with.
Yes, absolutely. There's a band called Helado Negro. It's actually Ecuadorian, but via Brooklyn,
right,
or Brooklyn via Ecuador band, and fabulous new record.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that band Rye, I'm very excited to see, and King Tuff. And, of course, the hot ticket for me, at least, would be Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. Although recently when they played in Sydney, it was misadvertised. There was a typo, and it was Nick Cave and the Bad Seats. there's a lot of bands. I quite like that Foxygen song that I keep hearing. It's quite good. And
So it sounds like you've been making the rounds.
Well, this is just you and I talking right now. I cannot wait to go back to my hotel.
All right, Devendra Banhart, acting as our South by Southwest reporter on Soundcheck. Now, let me ask you, Devendra, about the new album called Mala. It's a different label. You're on Nonesuch. It has a perhaps different sound. Were you actually looking to hit a reset button with this, or was it kind of just a logical extension of what's come before?
Well, I think any time you're making a record, you're trying to hit a reset. The truth is, you're not trying. A reset is hit. That's just, for me at least, it's my experience is that it's always a reset button is hit for me. Mm-hmm. That's always a source of anguish for me, because I keep thinking, okay, I've written a record and great, I know how to do this now. And then the minute it's done, the reset button hits and it goes, oh, geez, how do you write a record? So for me this time, I wasn't writing in that space between this record and the last. I was working more on my visual art, and then it just felt like enough time had gone by. I don't like doing it. And I don't plan on doing that again, but I wanted to try a little space in between albums.
So when you say you don't like doing it, you mean that kind of 4-year hiatus?
Yeah, that wasn't enjoyable for me, and it wasn't time that I wasn't writing in that time. I wrote the record a couple months before we started recording it, and of course, it's informed by those 4 years. It's informed by those 4 years. But what we would like to do becomes clear once we finish what we just did.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I know what I want to do next, except I need to do it as soon as possible. And the minute that that's done, it'll make clear what I'd like to do. It's just a process of accepting conflict and learning how to tango with it.
Hmm. Well, you know, it's funny talking about going through, you know, a period that may not have been so enjoyable, and, you know, perhaps the confusion of emotions that goes with
it. So we're talking about my entire life then?
Well, you know, the thing that one of the things that struck me about the new record was there's a kind of humor, a almost whimsical sense of play on some of the songs. I mean, right at the start, you know, the album begins with this track called Golden Girls, where you are urging listeners to get on the dance floor in perhaps the least dance floor-y voice I have ever heard.
Thank you.
This is, yes, you can take that as a compliment. This is Devendra Banhart and the opening track of his new album, Mala.
You're a young man on the dance floor, a young man in a young man's world. Get on the dance floor, get on the dance floor, get on the dance floor.
That's some of the opening track from the new Devendra Banhart record called Mala, which came out on Tuesday. Devendra's on the line with us. He's actually in Austin, Texas for this year's South by Southwest Music Festival. He's got a Saturday night performance at the Central Presbyterian Church there. What about the title, Mala? I mean, that's a word you hear in Eastern Europe, in all the Spanish-speaking countries, in India. That word gets around. What does it mean to you?
You're right. I chose it for its salacious and lascivious qualities. It sure does get around. It's a pretty word, though. You know, hard to refuse. Hard to refuse. It's, yes, found in many Latin languages, and it means something different, even within languages that are of the same root. It's something different in Italian than in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, it also exists in Eastern European and Serbian, particularly, but it also exists in Maltese, in Esperanto, in Gaelic, in East German, where it actually means table. And I chose it because it is. It's ubiquitous among so many different languages, yet it's the same word and means something totally different. Also, it's a pretty word.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty word.
Okay. And you just like the sound of it.
Oh, yeah, in a, also.
Yeah. You sing in several languages on this record. I mean, you know, no surprise that there's some Spanish here.
I don't like the sound of it as much as I like the look of it. And I just like that it's all over the place, meaning something different. It's, mm-hmm. it's, you know, like you said, it gets around.
Yeah. I mean, you spent some time in Venezuela, so singing in Spanish, not such a surprise. You've done that before. Have we heard you sing in German before this record?
We have not.
Yeah.
This is my first time.
And it comes sort of halfway through the record. Now, I was talking before about, you know, the opening of the album, you know, this very kind of almost whispery plea to get on the dance floor, get on the, and it's like halfway through the record, you get to this track called Your Fine Petting Duck, and at the moment where you switch from English to German, you finally get something that sounds a little bit like dance music.
I'm saying,
Alejandro Banhart, Your Fine Petting Duck is a track from his new album called Mala. Devendra, who's the female vocalist there with you?
That is the artist Anna Krash, who also happens to be my fiancé, which is very unfortunate for her, I'm sure. And we wanted it to I guess we were thinking, what would it sound like if you had a, I suppose, the Shags meets New Order? Uh-huh. And of course, if you're going to attempt that, it must be sung in German.
So, I guess. I'm not sure I follow the logic there, but the Shags being the infamously untalented trio of sisters who recorded an album famous for being so untalented, and New Order, of course.
Well, that's a matter of opinion there, I would say. Untalented, I mean. We must not forget the endorsement of Frank Zappa. Mm-hmm. The Shags, better than the Beatles.
Yes, good old Frank Zappa. Always knew where he would be able to get press coverage with a pithy quote like that. Devendra Banhart is in Austin, Texas for the South by Southwest Music Festival, but we're talking with him about Austin and South By and the new record. There is a song not sung in German, although the title of it is German. It's called Für Hildegard von Bingen. Hildegard, the 12th century German abbess and mystic and composer. What drew you to write this song? What drew you to her as a figure, first of all?
Well, I like to look up the author. I like to look up the author. If I read a book I like, I'd want to look into the author. And I heard a song I liked, and I wanted to look into the author. This was the Kronos Quartet had performed a bit of her music.
Right.
So who is this person, this Hildegard von Bingen? I read her biography. And I was so disappointed in myself that I hadn't been writing about her, you know?
Hmm.
I hadn't been writing about... I was so disappointed that I hadn't discovered her earlier. You know, this medieval pedagogue, feminist, composer, mystic, naturalist, is just so worthy of homage. I actually want to. I would thank the way to do it for me. The challenge was how to do this. I don't want to write an biographical song. I'm sorry, biographical song, and I can't really cover her music at this point. So I actually took a note from one of my favorite composers, Harold Budd. He has a song for Derek Jarman, and that is the way I found out about Derek Jarman.
Hmm.
Is just dedicating the song to Derek Jarman,
the late English filmmaker.
Yes, and so this was for Hildegard von Bingen. Hopefully, that'll elicit some interest in her. That whoever listens to it independently will go research. The song itself is an alternate. You could say an alternate universe story. Maybe Hildegard is the one, you know, having this experience where she absconds, you know, swiftly through the night, and after having seen some MTV VJs in the mid-90s, Bill Bellamy, all these people, and she says, oh my God, this is how I'm going to get the message across. And she absconds and makes it to the big city and goes down to San Francisco, the Tenderloin, of course, and joins this MTV-like radio music station. And she's a VJ. She spins mostly Africa Bambaataa. But in between segments, she preaches, or she teaches, you know. But that has nothing to do with her, and it was more about getting an interest in her in a way that I thought would be appropriate.
That is an alternate universe, though, that I Devendra, would love to see or hear, is Hildegard von Bingen, who is a saint, by the way, as well as a composer and a writer and a mystic. Spinning Africa Bambaataa tunes on some MTV-type TV station. But for the moment, we'll have to content ourselves with the song Für Hildegard von Bingen from the album Mala by Devendra Banhart.
Now she's leaving. Congregation left the abbey.
suffocation. She's been dreaming.
Hildegard von Bingen, a song by Devendra Banhart from his new record called Mala. And if you are, in fact, intrigued by the story of Hildegard and want to hear some of her music, there are many recordings of it. She had a major kind of pop moment in the 90s when there were a couple of dance records actually done to her sort of florid, highly embellished version of chant. I would recommend going with the band Sequentia, but as Devendra said, Kronos Quartet have also done an arrangement of some of her music, so it's definitely worth checking out. And speaking of checking stuff out, Devendra, as you look forward to what is left of South by Southwest there in Austin, Texas, what are you looking forward to checking out, assuming you can get in?
Right. That is an assumption we need not make, because yeah, I can't. But I will say that this is a charming town. It's sort of the Southern Fred Astaire. It's got a lot. There's a lot of Southern pizzazz. Not that Fred had any Southern pizzazz, but he's just the epitome of charm. Mm-hmm. And Austin's got it. Let me tell you right now, reporting here, charm. Austin's got it.
All right, Devendra, go get yourself some barbecue.
A pleasure talking with you. I'll catch you later.
Thanks very much. Devendra Banhart with us from Austin, Texas. The new album is called Mala. It came out on Tuesday. And here's a little bit of The Ballad of Keenan Milton. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC and New York Public Radio. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our engineering team includes Paul Schneider, George Wellington, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Greta Cohn and Katie Bishop with Alex Kappelman. Our digital producer in Austin this week is Mike Katziff. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer.